Tantrum House Board Gaming Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRD in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games, Bezier Games, the new classics, AEG, We Make Fun, The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games, and Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are here to help you sort through the cardboard commotion to help you find the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show.
Today we got Will Meadows,
Melissa Delp,
Kevin Delp,
and Sarah Meadows
in the house.
Welcome to another episode, everybody. Thank you guys for tuning in and checking out all the things that we've been playing. Hopefully we've played some games that maybe you'll be interested in. We've also got some events coming up that we're going to chat about on this episode, and I'm sure there'll be all kinds of other fun, so stick around. We may even get to movies and TV shows at the end. But before we get to that, what are some of the games that you guys have been playing most recently?
We have been working on a campaign of My Island, which is a sort of spiritual successor to My City.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're in
I think we're starting chapter four.
And each chapter
maybe
has like three games.
Mm-hmm. Either four or five.
Yeah. Okay.
So just like My City, slow start, but now things are starting to get a little bit more interesting. I definitely can see that there's definitely parallels between the two, and that just mechanic of them it takes a long time to get it ramped up, which I would rather just like, let's get going. Yep. So I'm like, in one chapter, I'm like, let's go boom, boom, boom.
I had similar experiences. Me, yeah. Sarah, Jonah, and Chantel played that one as well.
Oh, okay.
And same thing. It was like, first game, okay, I had never played My City.
Okay.
So if I needed the first game to learn it, but then the next four games, I was like, all right, can we just move along a little bit?
Right. So I'm like, this whole chapter should be one game.
Yes.
So we just
Then after that, it doesn't
So matter. We just finished the monsters where they are invading the...
Your island?
Yeah.
Coming in the shores?
Yeah. So that was cool. So
yeah.
Spoilers.
I will say, Kevin and I played My City two-player. And I got behind early and never caught up. So basically, he like completely ran away with it.
Oh, so
this one, we are playing four players instead of two.
Yep.
But I feel like the scores are pretty close.
Yeah. Yep. So two of us are tied for first. And I don't know how many more points behind are you, Melissa?
Maybe one or two circles.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, I wonder if it's a universal player count experience for those types of games. Because most of the legacy games that I've played have been multiple players.
Mm-hmm.
Usually there's not a runaway. Okay. Seems like in all the ones that I've played.
In My City, Melissa didn't do any gold, and she should have done gold.
It was something that there was a mechanic or a aspect of it that I didn't delve into, and that was a big mistake because it had big ramifications.
Yeah.
And by the time I realized that, it was a little too late.
Yeah.
Because you were like comparing to the other players.
Yes.
And like once he had so much more than me, it was like, oh, well.
I was way behind for a long, long time. We were pretty,
But way behind is still only like 3 points.
It was way more than that.
There's a couple catch up leader mechanics in My Island.
Yes. And we hit those and I was fine then.
Yeah.
But we were a good 10 games in and I had like 2-3 coins or whatever. 2-3 on the track.
Points, yeah.
Yeah, points. And that was it.
Cool.
I caught up.
You did.
I did. It took a long time to catch back up, though. I just played really bad at the beginning.
Yeah. Personally, I would recommend other campaign type games before someone played this one as their first experience. But that's just my personal opinion.
You wouldn't say the other way around? Like, this one's nice and slow.
Nope.
Start here.
I was like,
and
it's
then...
too slow.
Or just skip four campaigns. I do feel like that's the case. If you play these games a lot, just skip the four and then you're good to go.
Just play the third game in each chapter.
It's not a bad idea, actually. But
good. You could definitely do that.
Yeah. What about you guys?
What are we playing, Sarah?
We got a new game from Pandasaurus called
Courtesans
to the table last night.
And you introduced it to us.
Yeah. And introduced it to Kevin and Melissa tonight. It is a tableau building game where there's a center tableau where the queen is either esteeming certain people in her court or not esteeming certain people. So there's a, it's actually a piece of fabric printed that you're going to place cards above to be esteemed or below. And on your turn, you have three cards in your hand and you're going to put one in the center tableau, either above or below to influence. There's six colors. Or you're, and you're going to give one to somebody else and you're going to keep one of those cards to score. And so everybody's just adding cards every turn to your tableau. And there's a few cards that give you or will do an ability. So there's one that may be worth 2 points. There's one that maybe will, it's a shield, so it can't be removed. But there's a sword that can remove other cards. And then there's a mask that's hidden. So you'll play it face down so nobody knows what it is till the end of the game.
Yeah, and she says a few, and she's right. There's only a couple cards that have abilities on them type-wise, but there's a like 50% of the cards, it seems like. I didn't actually do the math, but a lot of the cards do something.
Yeah.
And so you usually are trying to figure out, like, do I want to do double influence on him and hide this one and shield one for myself? And it's nice because you only do have those three choices. It's still pretty strategic, yeah. And it's fun.
It was fun. This game has smart gameplay. Like, yeah. It's simple in the sense that you're just doing like the three simple things, but smart in like, oh, what am I doing with those three things?
Right. Kevin's collecting all these points over here. I'm going to keep putting these down, upside these face down ones, which give negative points to him, and he won't even know.
Hey, I got at least a point.
Kevin did get 1 point in the game. It was a great game.
Oh. Yeah.
So there's also some end game goals.
Sure.
Everybody has a couple end game goals that
you
are personal and hidden.
You mentioned the experience between a 2-player and a 4-player was different.
It is different. With a 2-player, I don't play many 2-player games, but I liked this one quite a bit more than a lot of those battle it out between 2 players.
On the table, it looks like several other 2-player games I've played.
Where
it, like we have a Sherlock Holmes and something game, and then Keymaster put out
Caper.
Caper.
Oh,
it kind of looks like Caper on the table. Board in the middle, play cards on either side of it.
Yep.
It was way more fun than those games.
That's okay. I don't know
about Caper. I personally really like Caper. But there's been several others that we've played 2-player, and they're not my favorite. But I would play this one over. I think we played it, 3-4 times last night? And
fun.
Then we played it again tonight. Yeah. So
makes you feel clever when you reveal the cards at the end and you're like, ha ha,
I got the yellow one.
Yeah. And also because of those in-game goals, it actually changes your gameplay a kind of significant amount. Because if the goals are like, if 2 or 3 people end up with cards that are like, you know, have more negative cards or whatever, have white
fewer.
Be negative. Yeah. Then all of a sudden, everybody has a really low scoring game because everybody was trying to hit those same goals. And if you've got, you know, I don't know, there's a bunch of different types of goals in the game, and it does actually shake up the way you play it.
I also, we haven't mentioned it yet, but the aesthetics of the game. Oh, I mean, I like everything about this game from a just the cards aren't regular size. Are they tarot?
They're not even tarot. They're
taller than normal.
They're a skinnier tarot.
Right. But they're just cool to hold in your hand. Mm-hmm. The artwork is cool. And they have gold foil on
the
cards.
Yes, I was just kind of looking at them and shifting them to make them shimmer.
The colors are nice. They're not the standard kindergarten colors.
Yep.
They're still easy to distinguish between the colors.
The only thing is that cloth board in the middle is like...
Right. I think they were trying to make it elegant, but then like the print quality just isn't good as it could be. A board would have been
fine.
Maybe
we should just have ironed it before.
Every time you play it.
Ours was a little wrinkly.
Yeah, a little wrinkly. I think it might be the print quality. I think that's Will's hit it.
It's a heavy textured fabric, which... If you had a smoother fabric, it would have a better print
quality.
Well,
like the neoprene would have been fine.
Maybe it's supposed to look like a tapestry
or
something.
I think it probably matches the theme better as a tapestry. You're correct.
Right, but when you have these cool-looking cards and it's very clean.
Right. It's not that it's bad. It's just that everything else is so perfect and gorgeous.
Yep.
And if you're like, if I'm going to nitpick something, it's going to be this wrinkly rag in the middle of the table. And it looks fine.
But it's not the rag itself. I think you got it. It's the print on it.
Yeah. And it's only bad because some of your goals are like, have the most butterflies. And you're like, which one is butterflies? I can't tell. And then you're trying not to make it obvious as you're squinting at the...
Now you know.
Yep.
No, that's
you could look at the color. That works too.
Highly recommend this. I think it's going to be a very popular game.
Yeah, I think so. It's a small, a medium, I don't know what it's called. It's smaller than Codenames box, size box.
It's almost like a half size
Codenames box. Half size of Codenames, yeah.
Like long ways.
It's not a taller vertical box, but
small box game.
Half that. Yeah.
And it's short, too. Maybe 20 minutes.
20 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, your first two or three turns, like, you have to kind of think about it. But then everybody gets in this nice little rhythm where you're like, play three, draw three, play three, draw three. And then you get down to your final turn. You're like, this is the one that matters the most. Everybody take 10 minutes on this turn. It doesn't take that long.
And then another player messes you up.
Changes everything.
Will kept saying, Melissa played. Now I have to completely change my strategy.
Right. Yep. I was going to give myself two positive points. Now she made it negative. So I'm giving this card to somebody else. Yeah, it was fun. I enjoyed this one. All right, let's take a moment to change gears real quick because we've got a guest in the house. Let's welcome Chris Leader.
Hey! All right, very excited to have Chris Leader in the house. Chris, how you doing, man? It's good to see you.
I am doing fantastic. It is so good to be here talking with you.
Yeah, we have run into each other a number of times in the past. I know that you've got lots of different things going on in the board gaming space. We definitely want to talk about the Kickstarter that you've got going on right now. But first, just give our audience a little bit of a rundown on who Chris Leader is.
Oh, man. So I'm Chris Leader. I am by day, I am the director of fun for Calliope Games. So I work on games. Thank you. So I'm working on games like Rollforward and Suro and things like that. Wonderful family and gateway games. But the great thing about it is I have the opportunity to freelance a bit because Calliope is very much in a specific lane. And Ray Weirs, my boss, a wonderful human being, has given me the latitude to be able to go and design to my heart's content if I have a game that's outside the parameters that we usually work within. So I have had the opportunity to work with some wonderful people and other publishers to make City of Gears and Space Mountain and Back to the Future Dice Through Time for Ravensburger and a few different other publishers. So I love the opportunity to be able to really work on the Calliope stuff on all levels, from the design and development to, you know, marketing and all that. But it's also nice to be able to stretch my design muscles and do some things outside of the Calliope realm. And I'm really lucky to be able to do that. And I get to collaborate with some wonderful people like Ken Franklin and Kevin Rogers, with whom I worked on the Flashpoint Legacy of Flame game, which is on Kickstarter now.
Yeah. Congratulations. It looks really exciting. It looks cool. That's a great group of guys together to be able to work on a project. How long were you guys working on this before it unveiled itself?
We began working on this in 1973. it feels like it sometimes. We started work on this 3 years ago. The short version is that it began a conversation between Ken Franklin, esteemed game designer, and Tricia Sidney, who at the time was working for Indie Boards and Cards. And they were talking about something completely off the topic. And they got to talking about games and what games would be wonderful. And the subject of a legacy version of Flashpoint came into being. And it sounded like maybe it was an idea that Indy had been kicking around for a while, but couldn't quite, you know, figure out exactly how to make it work. Or, yeah, I mean, it's a lot of work. A legacy game is a tremendous amount of work. So Ken being Ken, he said, could we pitch an idea? And Tricia said, yeah, that would be great. So he called up me and Kevin Rogers. We have worked together on a few different games, and we just synergize when it comes to certain games. And when Ken called and said, how would you guys like to do a Flashpoint Legacy game? We jumped at the chance. And I mean, when we get into something, it's not like, yeah, we'll put it on the schedule for a week from now or a month from now. It's let's begin making notes and getting going on this thing right now. And that's what we did. We put together a whole pitch with scenarios and kind of a narrative around it. And we pitched it to Travis and Nick and the team at Indy. And they really liked what we were showing them. So it was 3 years ago. And then obviously just iterations and coming up with different campaign levels and different things we could do. It was a long process to get here, but we're so excited that it's finally arrived.
Excellent. So Flash, give us a little bit of a rundown on Flashpoint, since I'm assuming a lot of the mechanics, at least in that first couple of rounds, are going to be similar to this. This is a game that came out 2010-ish or something? When did,
yeah,
it's been a little while, right?
It has been quite a while that this game has been out, and it's beloved. I mean, people, it's a cooperative family weight game, and people have enjoyed it for a really long time. And just to go back, Kevin Lansing, who created the original system, did an amazing job of having immersion and emergent explosions and fire. And every time you think, oh, I got to roll the dice, it better not hit this spot right here. You know that's right where it's going to hit. It's amazing. I love that about Flashpoint. So anyway, we started as fans of that original system and the expansions, the different boards that you could use. So when we approached it, we had some ideas for what we wanted to do in a legacy game. And Travis and his team at Indy also had ideas for how they wanted the legacy game to work. They've done Aeon's End. They've done other legacy games. So they have some great experience in that realm. And we looked at it and said, okay, what do we really like about legacy games? We consider the Pandemic legacy games to be amazing gold standard type legacy things. And there's a lot of other examples of legacy systems. We just happen to really like that, and it worked well for what we're doing with Flashpoint. So telling a story episode by episode was the way to go. But the thing that we hit right away, the wall that we hit was, okay, you can't have the same house burning episode after episode after episode, or the same two or three. It's going to have to be a new board every episode. So one of the things we had to figure out was, how the heck do we create all these boards, which I know from being in the publishing world, it's expensive. Boards are not cheap. So how do you have 12 plus episodes with different boards in all of them and make this not a $200 game? And so what we had the idea to do was actually put half of the board on two different spiral books that you push together, you know, mm-hmm. Shades of Gloomhaven or whatever it might be, where you actually put the maps together. And we found a way that worked really well, and we could do a lot of maps with it being not very heavy. That's the other thing. It's really the weight. Those boards are really heavy. Too many boards, and the box gets heavy, and it's no good. So we were looking at it from a few different angles. We were looking at it as, how do we want to tell the story? How do we want it to grow and change? But we do. We use a lot of the Flashpoint-based stuff that's there. We're not reinventing the wheel, and we're honoring what's there. So people who really love Flashpoint can come to this, and they'll kind of get the feel of it. There's prologue missions that kind of get you up to speed, which are great for the story. You get to know some characters, but they really kind of teach you the base of it. And then from there, it kind of grows, and we introduce some new concepts. And then we also introduce concepts that came in the expansions that kind of flow naturally in the narrative that emerges.
I love it. I'm actually kind of scrubbing through the Kickstarter campaign right now just to check out everything that's got going on. First off, congratulations. This is not even, I mean, this is coming out a couple of days from now, but right now you guys have already hit $117,000 of your 20,000 pledge base goal, which is awesome. So congratulations on that. Obviously people were excited about it. What are some of the things that you're hearing from the audience, from the playtesters? Like, what are the aha moments maybe that we can look forward to when we actually get to play this thing?
Well, let me tell you the big twist that happens in the end. I don't know. I shouldn't do that probably. I will say this. People have been really, really hungry for more Flashpoint material in general. I mean, Tragic Events came out something like 7 years ago. That was the last expansion that came out. And Tragic Events introduced the event deck and the fire deck, which was... the original game came with the hotspots system, where you drop little yellow things and they might become something. And it was nice, but the fire deck and the event deck that came out, they replaced that at the end of the last wave of expansions. And it was great to have events pop up. Suddenly things were happening, and the fire deck was, I mean, you were still mostly rolling dice and placing stuff based on the coordinates you rolled. But because the fire deck might cause an acceleration, or there could be flare ups, it added just new tension, new ways for the game to surprise you. So one of the things that people have really responded well to is having specific event decks tied to the episodes means that you're immersed in the story in a way that, you know, the Tragic Events event deck was very, very basic. It was like, oh, it's beginning to rain, so roll and put out some fire here. With this one, if you're in a specific type of place, You know, if you're at a fast food place, you can have events that talk about grease fires, you know, that kind of thing. And it kind of moves along the line. Yes. So that's one of the things that people are really loving is that the story is not just in a little, it's not in some narrative you read in the beginning and end. It's also in the events that happen during the episode itself. And I'll say the other thing that people have responded well to is we keep the unlocks to the beginning and end of the episodes, not so much during the middle. We want people to experience that excitement of being in Flashpoint without it being stopped and you're stickering things or you're scratching things off in the middle. So we try to keep that to a minimum, and people have really responded well to that as far as how we use the legacy system.
Excellent. That's super cool. So give us a little bit of an idea on that timeline. The campaign ends. Are we looking at delivery 2025? Is it... What you guys' plans for that?
Yeah, my understanding is that they're looking to deliver the first quarter of 2025. So I think the campaign page I think says January 2025, which is awesome. We're still, it's a legacy game and it requires a lot of testing. And there were a lot of iterations. And the problem is with legacy games, it's really tough because if you have a group test it, they really can't test the flow of the legacy elements a second time. They've kind of been spoiled. So the pool kind of dries up fast. So we're actually still doing last minute testing and getting new groups involved. I mean, we're looking to make sure that this works well. And part of that is making sure that people go from cards that tell you what to do to a paragraph book that you read that tells you what's going on. We want to make sure that people flow easily from one thing to the next. So I think, yeah, early 2025 for release is the target. And I think that's, that gives ample time for testing and then production of the thing.
Yeah, sounds fantastic. All right. So whether it's with Calliope or for Flashpoint or just as Chris, where's the next time we're going to run into each other? Are you guys going to be at Gen Con Origins? Anything coming up? What's the
Yeah, I know for sure that for Calliope I'll be at Gen Con for sure. And I'm pretty sure Indie Board and Cards will be there too. They tend to be there. I like bumping into those guys there, and it's gonna be fun to see as the years go by, Flashpoint Legacy of Flame things at the booth. It's gonna be really fun to look for that. So yes, I will definitely be at Gen Con, and I can't wait. I don't do as many conventions as I used to, which is good for family time, but I definitely miss getting together face to face with people and just catching up on what's been going on.
The family stuff is important. You gotta find ways to combine them. That's what I'm doing. My oldest is actually coming with me to Gen Con this year and going to do some game demoing and have a great time. So it should be lots of fun.
My 13-year-old son, Jensen, is going to come and pitch in and help at the Calliope booth this year. Okay. So he's been asking to do it for years, and I've been like, I don't know if it's quite time, but he was not going to let me stop him this year. He's like, nope, I'm working, I'm doing it. So I'll actually have two of my sons there this year at Indy. So that's going to be really fun. I can't wait. And he has not experienced Gen Con before, and he'll be doing it while demoing games, which is going to be really interesting to see.
It is. It's a really great time. Actually, there's something about kids who know the industry, you know, naturally just because of their folks being in it. My son demoed last year with us as well. And people would come up to me afterwards. I don't even think they knew that I was his dad necessarily, but man, whoever that kid is over there demo games, he taught it better than the lady that I was, you know, whatever. And I was like, these kids know it. They know how to play it. They know how to teach it. It's fun. It's very enjoyable to watch.
It's a great source of pride when our kids can teach the games and they actually do like, to win the game, this is what you do. And then here's the steps you take. And you go, man, I would learn the game really well if he taught me. That's really great.
I 100% agree. I'm glad we're doing it right. The next generation is going to be ready to go. So
that's right.
Awesome, Chris. Well, super pleasure having you on the show. Really glad being able to talk to you. Very excited to be able to see some of the cool stuff you're working on. Is there anything else? Like, I always like to just poke and prod in case there's like a top secret thing that no one else has ever talked about. Like, what's on the horizon for you? You doing any other game design? Are you got any cool things, any plans?
This one's tough because I've been sitting on Flashpoint Legacy of Flame now for years. And when people are like, oh, what's going on? I'm always thinking, fire, fire is happening. And I couldn't really talk about it. So I'll be honest, I have a few things in the background that I'm working on, but I've really been doing more work on other people's projects and Calliope projects. We do have a couple of big games coming out for Calliope. We've got a game called Monster Academy by Mike Selinker and Matt Forbeck, which we've been working on. That's a big story-based game. And then we've got a great little game called Day of the Brambles by Peggy Brown, which is a card-flinging game. It's just hilarious. So I've been doing more development. Yeah. So I've been doing more development work than design work, but I'm really proud of the stuff that I've been working on. So I can't wait for that stuff to come out. It's going to be a really fun 2024. That's for sure. And, before I go, I want to give a big shout out once more to everybody from Indie Boards and Cards, Travis, Nick, Sydney, all of the people over there who've done an amazing job, bringing Legacy of Flame to life, and my design partners, Kevin Rogers and Ken Franklin. Kevin's amazing at writing narrative, and Ken had a knack for creating ways for us to keep our heads in this legacy system because it's easy to get in the weeds. So I just wanted to give a shout out to all those folks because I'm so proud of this game. I'm so proud of what we made, and it wouldn't have happened without all these amazing people. And Trisha, way back in the day for that conversation with Ken, where she kicked off the whole idea that we could do a legacy version of Flashpoint.
Man, kudos to all your team. It's really fantastic. It looks excellent. Congratulations on the great start to your Kickstarter. I hope it wraps up really, really well for you guys. Again, thanks so much for being on the show. Really pleasure having you, and we'll look forward to catching you in the next one.
Thank you so much.
Bye. Super great getting to talk to Chris about Flashpoint. Very excited for that Kickstarter campaign. Very interesting cooperative game where you are working to put out fires. And people love the old version, and I'm sure the new Legacy version is going to be fantastic. Sounds like they're doing a lot of work on that. But let's keep going with the episode.
This will be out, and I think the next week the ladies are going to Atom.
They are.
Yes. At the Gamers Ranch in Missouri.
This is the second.
It's going to be a great time.
Second annual, Adam?
It is, yeah. It's hosted by three different companies. Inside Up Games, Eagle Griffin Games, and
Queen Games
are going to be the hosts for the event. Last year, Jonah and I had the privilege of being able to go to it, and it was a really great time. They've got a super cool venue. It's in the middle of nowhere. Good luck, y'all, finding it.
We'll be fine. I'm familiar with the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, you're literally driving out on, I'm pretty sure, gravel road for the last stretch. And then you pull in. It's a huge lake, giant house. It's got every fun thing you can imagine. They got outdoors. They got like a disc golf, like a four-wheeler track. They've got inside, they've got pinball and video games and Legos and humongous TVs, and it's a really, really perfect venue for it. And what we did last year, I assume it'll be similar, but I'll be very curious to see what they've changed up this time around. They had several prototypes that they were working on that we got to play test. Each evening we were playing party games and some digital, like, it's not like that game, oh no, rambling,
like Jackbox sort of,
right? It feels like Jackbox. It wasn't Jackbox, but it was like a custom hosted experience where we were doing trivia and playing games live with a host, and man, it was lots and lots of fun. Have they given you guys a preview of what's coming this time?
There is a Blood on the Clock Tower.
Oh, no,
for the evening.
Mm-hmm. Melissa's so excited.
Maybe
channel your inner Will.
If I'm not one of the bad guys this time, I'll actually get to experience the like mystery and trying to solve it.
Here I thought she was going to be like, if I get out early, I can go play pinball.
So, confession, one of the reasons that I agreed to go was because they do have lots of pinball
machines. Pinball room,
and
yeah.
I do love pinball.
Can I tell a pinball story real quick?
Do it, yeah.
So one of our friends, he just got a pinball, the Jaws pinball, which is pretty new.
Nice.
And
is his friend Pete?
Yes. Pete's our friend. And he's had it for a few weeks now. And he's like, you guys can come over whenever. You know, we can like, you know, Melissa could try it out. I'm like, no,
I already know what's going to happen.
Melissa's pretty good at this. I was warning you. And he's like, oh, yeah, it'll be fun. So Melissa, we go over this past Saturday. And, you know, we play a couple hand or
warm-up rounds.
Warm-up rounds.
Yeah. So Melissa's playing.
Okay.
You know, get a feel for the table.
Melissa's scouting out how this actually works.
Right.
And then how to get all the bonuses.
Then we played Blueprints of Mad King Ludwig.
Okay. Very nice.
Yeah.
And then we're like, oh, let's just play one more. One more before we had to head out.
And they decided to do a four-player.
Four-player. So it takes a little longer. Well, there is Melissa's like first ball. Had like 150 million points, and we're all like 16 million.
So their goal was, can the three of them combine to beat my score?
Right, that was the goal.
Absolutely not.
Right. So Melissa got on the top score, I think number one score of like all time for that table.
Oh, yeah, awesome.
And
well, that specific table, yes.
Yeah, for that table. And Pete
which
was
probably
like,
won't be beaten, right, except that's for by well, Melissa herself.
Right, so Pete's like, oh, you guys are not invited back.
Can you, I don't even know this about pinball machines. If you unplug it.
Oh, you can reset
and plug
everything.
Plug it back in.
And there's a way to reset everything.
Okay. Because otherwise he's probably never beaten this high score, right?
No, well, I think he does have the grand champion. There's like a grand champion, then
he's
one,
a lot of
two,
time.
Three,
like,
four, five.
I've never seen a rule book for tables.
Whoa.
But
what?
There is a rule book.
There's a rule book for pinball. Wow.
And he said it is longer than most board game rules.
What? How? What? I'm so confused.
He says it has almost like video game modes where you can go through and unlock different challenges and achievements and all that sort of thing.
So it's kind
of
cool.
I can't even fathom this.
Because he was so, like, if you hit it up here, this will happen, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, so he said a lot of, I mean, he likes Jaws. Number
sure,
one,
yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah.
And he's just done a lot of like thinking and reading.
Hilarious.
And,
it's like, I'm going to play the whole movie,
right,
basically.
Yeah.
So. The trilogy. Is
we need a bigger boat. It like, came up quite a few times.
That's super funny.
But anyway, I am excited to,
back to Adam.
Play some of the pinball machines
and probably
at Adam.
Permanently get your name listed as the number one player.
And you might need to drag me away a couple times to make sure I actually,
play
some
board games.
Board games.
One of the very cool things that we got to do last year was that we actually got to play with Lacerda Vital and learn games from him. He was teaching new games that he was working on. We gave him feedback on games. It was a really interesting experience. You guys, I think he's not coming this year.
He can't make it this year.
Bummer. Do you know if anybody else is coming, like, or even on the media side and other designer fronts? Like,
there
you guys
are
know who's
a lot of other media. This is mostly a media event.
Okay. Yep, yep.
So we're there to collaborate and to make some great content.
See all the new cool stuff.
The new stuff coming out from these three companies.
Yeah, excellent. Should be lots of fun. And you guys already have plane tickets and cars and all that
good
stuff. Are you carpooling with anybody?
We are.
Oh, who are you guys riding with? Is it a
secret? We are carpooling. Well, it's not even finalized yet. We're still working out.
We have a Discord.
I was doing that last time as well.
Which flights. A Discord chat. Yes.
Did you guys have Discord last time?
I don't think we used Discord. They were using Discord. We didn't use it to negotiate our travel. We ended up riding up with Marty and Tony. Marty and his wife, because Tony wasn't coming. And it was a great time just to be able to hang out in the car. Like, it is 2 hours. How far is it from the airport?
It's two hours from the airport.
Yeah, it's a long drive, too, once you get to the closest airport. So it was a neat time to be able to just hang out and have conversations and get to know people better. And it was a lot of fun.
I think we have an obnoxiously early flight, though.
And Kevin singing it to the
we
airport,
do.
Right? Because I'll have to take our kids to school or something, probably.
At 6:30 in the morning or 5:30 in the morning? I don't remember what our flight is. Yeah, it was very early, but it was like...
It's walkable.
Well, yeah, it's
to the airport with our luggage, yeah. I pack light, at least. We'll see what happens.
If you can get Sarah to my house... Then we can get it to the airport.
Oh, that's worse. I'm closer to the airport than Kevin's house.
Aren't we closer to the airport?
No.
I think we're a little closer.
They're closer to
All right, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll make it a great trip. Well, cool. I'm sure you guys will have a great time. I hope that will be a lot of fun. And I'm sure everybody will be interested in hearing all the cool stuff that you guys get to play and try out on our future podcast episode.
Are we ready for the non-board game content?
Are we? Let's do it.
All right, Sarah.
Okay, so...
First of all...
Go... What were you going to
say? Sarah has some, like...
Is this your movie review opportunity?
So, last night, Will and I saw Dune 2, which we won't spoil.
Thank you.
We haven't seen Dune 2 yet.
Yeah. So, we realized, one, I'm not big into a lot of these sci-fi shows and the lore and all this stuff.
The new Star Wars? Come on.
No, not that either. But...
Not the new Star Wars.
I'm not into a lot of that. I just don't have time right now. But... We did make a very important observation.
It's like a 3-hour movie, Sarah.
It is.
Yes. We did make an important observation.
It's a 3-hour movie and similar to the first one, like it has a lot of lore in it, which is actually one of the cool things
about
it.
It was a great movie. I enjoyed it.
Okay.
Sorry. But the names are difficult.
Oh, the people.
Everything is difficult.
Everything is difficult to pay attention and keep track of.
Oh, it's right. Hold on just a second, because we were watching the Dune 1, part 1, and I'm like, Melissa, you have to get off of your iPad and watch, because there's literally voiceover or subtitles.
There's subtitles. Right. Because it's like, in other languages.
And sign language, context. So you can't even hear that there's actually words up on the screen.
Sorry, continue on.
So you do need to pay attention. So it's not for the faint of heart. Right. You can't be doing other stuff. Yeah. Can't be scrolling on your phone while you're watching these movies. Well, we made an important discovery that important. Maybe
a strong word.
Maybe Lucas was pretty genius.
Okay.
If you notice, a lot of his characters, their names are all 4 letters.
Okay.
So Han. Star Wars, 4 letters.
Yep.
Right, it was
Leia.
Like, this is happening in the drive home last night. I was like,
Chewbacca.
I'm trying to explain the movie to Sarah, and I'm like, you know, the Bangle Jangalangs, they had the powers, and then Argon came in. Like, we couldn't remember any of the names. And I was like, man, see how they're not named Luke or Leia or Solo or R2-D2 or C-3PO. And I was like, maybe the secret is
everything 4. Is 4.
And if it's a bad guy, it's 5 letters, Darth Vader, Jabba. Like, if you want to get crazy, you just go 3 letters, Jar Jar.
He's not quite all there. But we went through, I was like, oh my word, almost all of the characters, at least with the first few movies, fit into those categories.
That's interesting.
Although
Chewbacca was not, but
the
he
main
goes
guy
by Chewie. And that's almost like a dog name. We were all okay with remembering that.
I mean, the main guy in Dune, though, is Paul.
That is true.
That is true.
Paul
and it
so
fell
far.
Out
his,
of place.
His name changes in this one. Do you guys know that? Is that a spoiler?
I know. I've read the book.
I guess it gets shorter, actually, but
it does. Like, but Paul seemed out of place to me.
Okay.
It bothered
the
me.
The actor or the...
No, not at all. Not at all the actor. The name seemed out of place.
Oh, gotcha.
In their language system.
Yeah, well, he's coming out.
Right.
Spoiled,
outsider. But.
I haven't read the book. Are most of the names of that clan, like what we would consider Anglo-Saxon?
Yeah, because he came from Scottish. He's a Scottish heritage.
His name is, but he's like the only Saxon in this movie, because everybody else is tribal or from other
worlds.
Like, so it was fun. It was just a neat, like, we were laughing because it was, I don't even know how you say this word. I can't repeat it. I know what we're talking about, but I could say the Force. Sith. I got
spice.
Right? Spice? Yeah.
Spice.
There you go. Yep, it was fun. It was a good time. It was an interesting movie. I'm sure you guys will enjoy it when you get a chance to see it. Yep. You guys have been watching Bad Batch.
We've been watching Bad Batch season 3. I think we're up to episode 3. I think there's 4 or 5.
Have they released? They haven't released them all yet.
No, there's going to be 10 episodes of season 3. And you are up to what season? What
season 2? I think we have like 3 episodes left.
Okay,
so I'm catching up.
Remind me where you're at
without spoiling too much.
Well, season 2 has been out for a year, Melissa.
Right. So again, I don't remember the names of the characters because I'm terrible.
Omega,
this. The Green Lady. That they get all their jobs from.
Oh, Sid.
Oh, yes. Yeah, these are tough names.
She reminds Yoda me of like Roz from Monsters, Inc.
She does.
Sid, yeah.
She basically, like, they left her. They were done.
Did they go to the island?
They did. They went to the island. Okay. And they're basically moving in, and that's where we just left off. So.
Okay. Ooh.
They got hit by a tidal wave.
Okay.
Now they're
the flood just happened.
Yeah, yeah. They're going to hang out and rebuild.
Rebuild the island.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. So, seemed fun. I actually enjoyed the last episode. Last several before that were getting a little redundant, where it was like, go make me some money and come back. And,
so, Crosshair's not with them.
He's not. He just got crazy. Yeah. Started murdering people.
Oh, okay. So, Hunter's with their...
They did lose another guy.
Wrecker.
Yeah, Hunter Wrecker.
Is Echo gone?
Echo just left.
Yep.
She was all mopey over that for a little while.
Omega,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah. But now she has a friend on the island.
So what do you think about the story? I know you said it's a little slow right now.
Mm-hmm.
But Omega's a main character throughout the whole thing. It's really centered around her.
Yes,
who do you
definitely.
Think she is? Like, what do you think? Why is she so important?
That's a great question. They just had the energy sucking dragon thing like 2 episodes ago.
Okay.
And they were like, it has the same DNA and the girl is the key. Okay. I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know where it's going.
Season 3 will unlock some things.
Yeah. So
not only within the Bad Batch, but outside. Like,
okay,
connecting
so it's gonna be worth
to
it,
the
huh?
Star Wars universe.
All right.
It's like, what?
Is she like a Palpatine clone that's going to get turned into a super bad guy and something else? Mm. I have no idea.
You've seen all 9 movies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's certain things.
Getting awakened,
like,
huh?
Oh, that's how that happened.
Ooh, okay. All right, good. I'll be ready. And that's already been revealed in the 3 episodes.
The 3rd episode just revealed it. Yeah.
Maybe. All right,
check it.
No,
out.
I mean, they use the same keyword, Melissa.
The keyword. Spoilers. Sarlacc. Hopefully, you'll be ready for that. Sarlacc. She's the Sarlacc? Time travel? I don't know about that one.
The Force.
That's right.
5 letters. Oh, no. Is the Force bad?
I don't know.
Dark,
okay.
D-A-R-K.
Okay,
dark.
So,
dark is good.
Okay.
And
so,
light is bad.
Oh, no.
5 or 4 letters.
Oh, no,
Kylo, bad, but then
good.
Then good. We just didn't know it was coming.
Oh, it was a foreshadowing if I only have
but
4
Ren
letters.
Has 3 letters.
Ren.
Yeah. Maybe. Ray.
Oh,
was
Ray.
It Ray? Sorry, Ray.
Ray. Yeah.
Still 3 letters.
Ray. That's funny. Well, hopefully that was entertaining to you in some way or another.
Back to board games. We have some live stuff coming up.
Okay.
So check out our Thursday night playthroughs, but then our Saturday morning board game show, we have a special sort of theme. We've decided that the theme for our April Saturday morning board game show is...
Oh, was it because of April? It all makes sense now. I didn't get that when we said
I kept saying the word April to Will. April. It's
April.
The A-list of board games.
Yeah, I like it. This episode is brought to you
by the letter A.
That's right. It's going to be a great time. So tune in for that for sure. We always love hanging out with you guys playing games live. We've also got... we haven't really talked about this as a group yet, official, but I think we need to do another summer community game day.
Okay.
Find us a space, get some people to come in, get enough room to have, you know, a couple hundred people maybe come play board games with us and keep it super affordable so that it could be lots of fun. But
cool.
We'll have details on that. We've talked about it just briefly as a group, but we'll give you guys information. And if you're in the area, we'd love to have you come hang out with us this summer, play some games. It'd be a lot of fun. But until then, keep on playing games, have lots of fun, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and tantrumhouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard to Tantrum House, 306 Barry Drive, that's B-A-R-R-Y, Greer, South Carolina, 29650.